Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In the first hour of the show today, we'll be talking about finding good movies for children to watch and for families to watch together. And our guest for the show is Nell Minow. She writes about movies and TV, also the internet and parenting. She's the author of a book that's been out for a couple of years now and is now in its fourth printing, The Movie Mom's Guide to Family Movies. It's available in paperback, not terribly expensive. It was published by Avon in 1999. So if you're interested in some recommendations on films to rent, you can go there. She also has a website where she reviews current films, and this is www.moviemom.com. So if you have access to the internet, you can check that out. She's also a columnist for the web mag familywonder.com. She's also written articles for many publications, including USA Today, Child, Parents, Slate. And she's talking with us this morning by telephone. And as we talk with Nell Minow, you should certainly feel free to be a part of the conversation. Maybe you have some questions or comments about current films, particularly those that are aimed at younger viewers. Maybe there is something that you would like to recommend. When we talk about movies on this show, we always encourage people who are listening to be reviewers and tell us about what they have been watching. So maybe you've been to the movies lately with your kids and you have strong feelings about something that you've seen. That would be great, too. You can participate that way. And any way you want to join the conversation, you can do that. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. That one is good anywhere that you can hear us. Around Illinois, Indiana, any place the signal will travel, that's 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Ms. Minow, hello.
Yes.
Thanks for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be on.
Once again, I really enjoyed last time we talked, and we sort of said, you and I and here among ourselves, that we should have you on again sometime, and I'm sorry that it's taken so long.
Well, I'm very, very glad to be back.
I guess maybe the point to start out with would be to say what you might about to those people who would say that there is nothing. There's nothing worth watching for children. There's not much in the way of family films, family fare that's available out there. I think you probably would say, well, that's not really true as long as you're willing to look carefully. And maybe it doesn't even take all that much careful looking.
Well, sometimes it does, I'm afraid. And I have a lot of sympathy for people who say that there's nothing out there. I was really sorry to see earlier this summer that the annual Disney animated release, something that we look forward to every year, is a PG this year for the second year in a row. So if Disney feels that they can't make a living on a G-rated animated film, then there's something really wrong out there.
Mm. Have they, do you think, pretty much decided that they're just going to go for films that are really for young viewers, that they're just going to do direct-to-video, and because they're figuring people are going to buy them, they're going to rent them for watching at home, and it makes more sense for them to do that?
I think that is true. Now, I don't really recommend taking kids under 5 to a theater anyway, even if they're very comfortable with a lot of different material. On a video, it's very different seeing it in a theater where it's big and it's dark than it is seeing it at home surrounded by all your favorite toys and when you can turn it off any time. So I don't think, you know, I'm not worried that there are not a lot of Elmo and Grouchland-type theatrical releases or the Tigger movie. But I am a little concerned that a lot of what does come out in the PG category really is pretty vile. Earlier this year, a movie came out called Sea Spot Run that was very heavily marketed to kids and was rated PG. And I have to say, it was about as disgusting and offensive a movie as I've ever seen. So I have a lot of sympathy for parents who go to something like that hoping that they're going to see something wholesome and find themselves, you know, in a minefield.
Well, there I think you point to something that many reviewers and people who write about media and film have pointed to, and that is the rating system that exists for films. It's not terribly helpful to parents and, in fact, may be very misleading. And a lot of folks, and I know I've talked about this with Roger Ebert, and he's written about it, and I'm sure that you have, and a lot of other people have said, we really ought to have a better system so that parents can have a better idea what it is they're getting into. And I think, actually, even in other countries, they have different ratings, more sophisticated rating, so that you can get some idea what's
what's really
out there. But I guess I wonder, because it seems like Jack Valenti and the people who set up the system we have seem to think that it's just fine, and so one wonders, will there ever be in the United States anything other than what we've got right now?
Well, a couple of points on that. One is that even Jack Valenti and the MPAA have agreed that they're now going to be disclosing a little more information about the basis of the rating, although what it means when they say crude humor is sort of up in the air. But let me tell you something that I think is really insidious, and I wrote an article about this for USA Today earlier this year. One thing that I've seen a lot is that they are now coming out with coming attractions and commercials for movies that have different scenes in them and different language in them than what you actually see in the movie. So that's, it's just an incredible example of misdirection. And for example, when in the coming attraction, which you just couldn't miss in the commercial, which it was just on everywhere you look for What Women Want, they had Helen Hunt and Mel Gibson together, and she said, "Oh my God, I just looked at his crotch." Mm. Well, in the movie, it was a much more clinical term, and I have no problem with the use of that language, but it really drives me nuts when I think that parents who are so desperate for any indicator of the level of material that's in a movie get bad information about what's really in there. The same thing just came up with a movie that's in the theaters right now, Evolution. I actually saw two different coming attractions for that with two different movies. In one of them, there's an alien inside the guy's leg, and in one of them they said it's going for his stomach. And another one said it's going for his crotch. And, of course, in the movie, again, there was a much more clinical word. And you know, what are parents supposed to do with that kind of information? How are they able to find out what's really in a movie without actually going to see it themselves? And that's actually how I got started with my website.
Well, that's really discouraging. I guess I hadn't noticed that myself, although I think probably mostly I see movies on video, I guess, so I suppose I don't see that many trailers.
Uh-huh.
Or don't really have that opportunity to make that comparison. But I can imagine many parents really being steamed and feeling that they had actually been suckered.
Well, really, it's deceptive advertising. For a PG-13 movie, that's really the most difficult category, because that's kind of the no man's land of the rating system, where you have some stuff that is quite mild and you have some stuff that is really, really vile. And another problem I have with the MPAA is that they give kind of a get-out-of-jail-free card to a comedy. So material that would get an R rating in a drama or a thriller gets a PG-13 rating in a comedy. And the classic example there is the Austin Powers movies, where because he says frickin' all the time, they give him a PG-13, even though there's some extraordinarily explicit sexual humor in that movie.
Mm. We have a caller to talk with. Our guest this morning in this first hour of Focus 580 is Nell Minow. She writes about movies and TV, as well as parenting and the Internet. She's a columnist for FamilyWonder.com. She has her own website that is MovieMom.com, where there's information about films. There are ratings for current films. All of this trying to help parents find good movies for their kids. She's also the author of The Movie Mom's Guide to Family Movies. It's been out now a couple of years and has been quite popular. It's a paperback book and not very expensive. So if you're looking for some guidance about good family movies, things that are now available for rent, you can go and take a look at that book. And we have a caller ready to go here to talk with on our line number one in Champaign. So let's do that.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you for saying that you recommend people not take their kids under five to feature films, because I learned the hard way. I took my 2-year-old to what I thought would be fun, you know, Tarzan or something, the Disney movie, which when I was a kid, I remembered most Disney movies being reasonably, at least the G movies being reasonably safe. And I mean, we lasted about 5 minutes or 10 minutes. The opening scene was the ship burning, and the soundtrack was one of the loudest. I don't know if that was the theater or the movie, but I saw Blade, and I don't think Blade was as loud as Tarzan. Unbelievable. The whole theater was shaking. My son was terrified. As soon as the popcorn ran out, we were gone. I mean, we were just out of there.
I think most parents have had that experience. We do have wonderful memories of those movies, and we do want to share them with our kids. And you did exactly the right thing, which is, you know, some parents sit there and say, oh, it'll be all right, it'll be all right.
It'll get better, but I just, you know, what was the point? He was terrified.
Yeah. That is too bad. A lot of people complained about Tarzan and how scary it was. And, of course, in a lot of those movies, the main character loses a parent, and that can be very upsetting for some children.
But, you know, in The Jungle Book, he loses a parent, too, and it's not anywhere near as traumatic.
No, it isn't. Not at all.
I'm just wondering, is that a trend that we've seen in movies, that they I mean, maybe because they're getting more dependent on big special effects, and animation is so much more complex and different than it was when Disney was making them in the 60s and 70s, and I guess even early 80s. Are we seeing just, it's so overwhelming now.
Well, one of the things that bothered me about Atlantis, which I liked as a movie, I thought it was fine, but again, it is a PG-13, and there's one point where hundreds of people are killed, and no one even blinks an eye, because they're all characters, we don't know their names, and so we don't really care about them. And so an expedition that starts out with hundreds of people ends up with about six or seven people. You know, nobody ever says, gee, those, you know, our crew members perished, and that's a real problem for me. Another thing that they do a lot in movies now, like The Mummy Returns and The Phantom Menace, is that they have the entities that are killed not be human, and so that doesn't really count in the rating system. So as long as you're blowing up a lot of killer robots.
Yeah, that was started back with the cartoons, even when I was a kid. When I was a little older, they had G.I. Joe. You'd see just hundreds and hundreds of explosions and things being destroyed, and then these little parachutes, which would
make
that the guys made it out safely.
Right.
It's totally ridiculous, and even a kid could figure it out, but the sort of destruction was unending. Anyways, I think it's great.
I think that one reason, you know, you talked about how movies are more intense now than they were when we were kids, and I think one reason for that is that kids are a little bit numb. They see so much of it on television that they just have to try harder to shock them. And Atlantis is almost more like Star Wars than it is a typical Disney movie, because there's lots and lots of battles with robot monsters and stuff like that. So you're going to lose, rating at PG, you're going to lose all the 4 and 5 and 6-year-olds, but they're hoping that they're going to bring in 10, 11, 12-year-olds who thought they were too old for a Disney movie.
Right. Well, I think that what you're doing is great. Thank you.
All right. Well,
thanks
for the call. And again, of course, anybody who has a comment or a question, or maybe there's a film that they've seen recently that they think is really good, that they'd like to recommend to other people, you can call us, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. I'm interested in the sort of the exchange that you had with the caller about this idea that we probably should think differently about the movies that we saw when we were children and those that are available now. At least we ought to be a little careful. I was thinking about, you know, for example, the fact that we're talking about this motif in some movies that lead character loses parent.
Yeah.
And, you know, it makes me think of, oh, Bambi, for example. You know, and I suppose a lot of people, that was a heavy hit for kids our age.
Listen, I was 38 when I saw Bambi for the first time because my mom wouldn't let me see it as a child, and I was pretty upset.
So we might sort of say, well, we saw those movies and maybe we weren't psychologically scarred and maybe we should think, well, I guess that's okay. But it may indeed be that something about the way that the movies are produced today maybe gives them more impact, even though we might tend to say, well, that's kind of all the same thing.
You know, there's a movie called Fly Away Home, a lovely, lovely movie about a girl who befriends some geese, and the movie was about to come out as a G, and the distributor called up the producer and says, we're going to need you to put one four-letter word in the movie. And the producer said, I'm sorry, what? And he said, well, we can't release it as a G because kids won't go to a G unless it's a Disney cartoon. So we're going to need you to put one four-letter word in so we can release it as a PG. And the producer said he didn't want to, but they finally persuaded him. And so there's one little four-letter word said off-screen by a bad guy. That got it a PG, and it was successfully marketed. But what is even more appalling to me than that story is that in the first 5 minutes of the movie, the main character's mother is killed in a car crash, and you would think that that would be enough to get it a PG. It's very upsetting, but somehow nobody cared about that. It was just a four-letter word. And now that DVDs are available and you can hear the director commentary, it's stunning how cynical and manipulative the process is. I was watching the DVD for 28 Days, the alcohol rehabilitation movie with Sandra Bullock, and the director said, Sandy got a little worked up in this scene, and she used the F word, but you can only have one F word in a PG-13 movie, and we needed it later, so we had to redub that.
Well, that gets on another thing, that kids won't go to see movies that they think are for kids.
Yeah.
And how is it that you might engineer them into seeing some movies that you might think were good, and in fact you think, well, if we could actually get them to watch the movie, they would they would like it and afterwards say, oh, yeah, that was a pretty good movie, but that they're put off by this stamp on the movie that says, oh, well, this is for kids, and they would say, oh, well, I'm...
And that's also true of older movies. A lot of times they don't like older movies, and I know my daughter once said to me when she was about five, black and white movies are boring. I'm not going to watch it. Mm. And I brought home what I thought was a really good movie, and I said... No, they can't be much older than five if you're going to try this tactic on it. But I said to her, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were old enough for my special movie. I'll tell you what, you go in color, and your brother and I will watch it, and we'll catch up with you later on. So she said, well, I'm only going to watch 5 minutes. That's all I'm going to watch. And I said, okay, fine. Well, it was a Marx Brothers movie, and she just fell in love with it. It was great. And so, and it's become one of her favorite movies, and I never had a problem with her with black and white again. So that's one thing you can do is you can entice them. You know, don't say you're going to love this because they'll automatically get suspicious. What you want to do is find some movie that connects to them in some way. If you're going to go to Mount Rushmore, as we did, we showed our kids North by Northwest. And if you're going to go to London, you can show them Mary Poppins or something like that. So try to connect to something that's of interest to them. When my son went through a phase where he was very interested in boxing, I showed him a movie about a boxer, and that's one way to kind of draw them in. Another way is to tell them a little bit about the movie. One thing that is really hard for parents to understand is that we bring a lot of real-world experience to a movie as we're adults, and everything makes sense to us. And if we see somebody walking in front of the Eiffel Tower carrying a bag of groceries with French bread sticking out, we say, oh, Paris. But kids don't always get all of that, and so you may have to set the movie up, even until they're 8 or 9 years old, and say to them something like, this is a movie about a teacher who travels halfway around the world to teach the children of a king, but they fight all the time, and they have a lot of arguments about a lot of different things, and then have your child say, well, then what happens? Well, I don't know. Let's sit down and watch it together and sort of intrigue them that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember from having talked to you last time that one experience we share is having grown up watching movies on WGN.
Yes.
That had...
Family classic, Frasier Thomas.
Friendly Frasier. What a guy. Him and Garfield Goose. I won't do the slapping thing. I mean, you know.
Well, Beauregard Burnside III.
And what's interesting is that, you know, GN, when we were kids, had this great collection of classic movies, the
That's
kinds
right.
of things that today... You can see on cable because they'll show them on AMC and
Turner
Classic Movies, but the broadcast networks won't show them. And just for the thing that you pointed to, because they have this idea that people today, especially young people, will not sit still for a movie that's not in color.
Well, you know, it's not just that it's not in color. They're told in the stories are told in a different, subtler style. And I was in the video store one day and overheard some teenagers talking. And they were renting some slasher movies, and one of them was saying, my dad told me that Psycho was a real scary movie, but, God, it wasn't scary at all. And, you know, they're just used to a different aesthetic, kind of, a different category. And you have to lead them there, and you have to talk to them before they see the movie. So they know what to expect, and they're not looking in the wrong place or looking for the wrong kind of... They're not expecting to see guts spilling out on the floor. And when my son was about 10... He came to me one day and he said, I need to see some scarier movies. I like scary movies and I haven't seen enough. And I said, okay, well, you've come to the right place because I'm the movie mom and I'll show you how it's done. And he was my little sort of lab rat. I really worked my way with him through every different kind of scary movie, jumping out at you scary, tension scary, gross scary, all of that. And I watched all the movies with him. Some of them I actually watched from the next room because my tolerance for those kind of things is not that great. We started with funny, scary, like Ghostbusters and Poltergeist and Arachnophobia, which I think is a real underrated movie, and worked our way up through that to Psycho being the last one. And by that time, he was about 13. And he never blinked an eye. He always said, wow, that was really scary. It was really interesting to see all the different kinds of scary things and to see the fact that different people just have incredibly different tolerances. You know, I'm the biggest sissy in the world. I always think that Lassie's not going to get Timmy out of the well. I fall for it every time. So it's interesting that I managed to produce a child who really likes scary stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that I like about that is that also what you're doing is you're sneaking in some cinema literacy.
Right.
And hopefully then the kids will see, not only will they see current movies or whatever it is that they want to see, but you kind of hope that they will at least see some of the things that we have seen and thought we were good. But they will have some sense of, you know, for example, they'll know about Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they'll see, movies that were made by great film artists, that they will at least see movies that previous generations were really moved by, and movies like, you know, when you told the story about the Marx Brothers, I thought for sure the movie was going to be To Kill a Mockingbird. You know, movies like that still grab me, and that I remember watching when I was little and thinking.
We really wanted to make To Kill a Mockingbird a special experience for our kids because it is such a wonderful movie, and so we read the book aloud to them first. And we even read them a short story by Truman Capote about his childhood, because, of course, the character Dill is based on Truman Capote. Mm-hmm. And so we gave them another perspective on some of those events. And then we said, now you're ready to see the movie. And it was really a very special family experience for us.
Yeah.
I did have my son watch a number of the Hitchcock movies. Strangers on a Train, there's just no more tense movie ever made than that one, and to talk to him about how it's done. I think one of the biggest mistakes that we make with our kids, and this just breaks my heart, is that we sort of teach them that movies and television are kind of a mental hold button. We say, here, go do this. It's kind of like a drug. And we say, here, go deal with this so that I can get some work done. And we don't really teach them to engage actively with what they've seen. And so I think your point about media literacy is such an important one. And I say start when they're really young, when they're 2-3 years old and they're watching Sesame Street or Blue's Clues, help them talk back to the TV and say, now, is Big Bird angry or lonely in this scene? And I think that really took courage, you know, to help them to talk, to identify emotions and to predict what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I suppose some people might see that as being a little bit overly didactic, and I guess you can do it in a heavy-handed way or you can do it in a lighter sort of a way, to use whatever it is you're watching,
right,
and whatever the themes are that this thing deals with, to use that as an opportunity to talk with your kids about whatever that thing is about.
That's right. Also, particularly, you know, teenagers and toddlers are a lot alike in a lot of ways. I always say that teenagers are toddlers with hormones. You know, they both are very oppositional, and they're very concerned with their privacy. And so a lot of times it's easier for them to talk about what's going on the screen than it is what's going on in their own lives, and it can be a real way of connecting with them. And then kids who are in the middle of that, kids who are sort of ages 7 through 14, they really love to categorize things. And in my book, I have 13 plots. I say every movie ever made falls into these 13 plots, starting with two people who don't know each other or know each other and don't like each other have to accomplish some task together, usually involving traveling somewhere, all the way to the end of which is just your basic explosion kickboxing type movie. And to help them to put those things into categories, anybody who's ever taken a 9-year-old movie to a movie knows that it takes him 2 hours to watch the movie and it takes him 2 hours to tell you the movie. And so working with them on summarizing, on figuring out what's important, is also a very worthwhile thing for that stage.
We are just about at the midpoint of this part of Focus 580, and we're going to talk some more with Nell Minow in just a second. However, first, because it's the first Tuesday of the month, we need to do this. This is a test of the emergency alert system. And this is Focus 580, our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. In this first hour of Focus 580, we're talking about family movies and how it is you can try to find good movies for your children to watch with them. And our guest is Nell Minow. She has a website, which is www.moviemom.com. Theaterfilmsnow.com, which has reviews of films that are out in the theaters now, suggestions about good movies that are available on video. And if you don't have access to the internet, you also might look at her book, which is The Movie Mom's Guide to Family Movies. It's published by Avon. It is in paperback, so it's not terribly expensive. It's in its fourth printing now, and again, has suggestions on films that are available for rent. Nell Minow has written for many different publications, USA Today, Parents, Slate, and is also widely interviewed. She does she reviews movies every week for a number of radio stations across the country. And she's talking with us this morning by telephone. And questions and comments are welcome. You have a movie that you'd like to recommend, anything else that's on your mind that has to do with movies, you can call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. I thought, in fact, in the Movie Moms book, I thought there was a lot of interesting ideas about watching movies, things that maybe even adults, if you were thinking about a movie and you go to the video place and you look at the things that are brand new and you're not terribly jazzed, suggestions about films that maybe either you haven't seen or you haven't seen in a long time. And one of the things that I liked in the book was the little festivals, that is grouping movies, either movies that because of their subject matter are interesting to put together, or movies that perhaps feature the same actors but in dramatically different parts. The one I remember was you suggested maybe people could watch Vertigo and Bell Book and Candle.
That's right.
Together, I love that idea. It's just to see Kim Novak and Jimmy Stewart in such radically different sort of parts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do things like watch Frankenstein and Young Frankenstein together, and
the same sets. They got the exact same sets for Young Frankenstein from Frankenstein. It's really fun to watch them together.
Well, he and Mel Brooks just stole everything completely.
Yeah.
Even the thing about the playing darts and the guy who has the artificial arm and all the really goofy stuff. And that's personally, Young Frankenstein is my favorite Mel Brooks movie. I could just watch it over and over again.
I got that on DVD, and there's a lot of wonderful extra material on the DVD, so I really recommend it.
But it's pretty funny when you actually see the source material and you see how closely it tracks the there's something about I think it's Son of Frankenstein or whatever the movie is,
right,
that Basil Rathbone. I'm thinking the one that where he plays the son.
Oh yeah,
that Basil Rathbone is in, where a lot of the stuff gets taken from. It's amazing, sort of, when you look at Rathbone and Gene Wilder, they actually kind of look alike. something about them, or maybe it's that little mustache that Gene Wilder has, and that sort of wild look that he gets in his eyes.
Yeah, I love that movie.
That's a great movie.
I totally love that movie. It was one of the first DVDs I bought when I got my DVD player. And I'm glad you like my festivals for snow days and sick days and for real hardcore film buffs. You know, I wrote the book, and obviously I had seen most of those movies, but there were a couple of classics I had never seen until I was writing the book. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I had never seen The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. I had never seen Spartacus, and I had never seen The Great Escape and The Court Jester. Those were four movies that are in the book that I had not seen until I wrote the book. And boy, those are great movies.
Oh, yeah.
And anybody that has missed those movies should go out and do it. Now, my son is now, the one I was talking about, is now 17. And he is, he's got a job in a video store, which is very good because he gets all the videos that he wants for free. And he's working his way through the American Film Institute list of the top 100 movies and the top 100 comedies and thrillers. And he's having so much fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for anybody who thinks that there are cool guys in movies today, and you can't hardly touch Steve McQueen. I'm sorry.
Oh, I love Steve
McQueen. But, that the great motorcycle jump, that's for adolescent boys or for pre-adolescent boys,
that's
I would think.
Right.
So that would be a great,
moment.
You know, an incredibly cool
And
movie.
For those of you who have not seen Chicken Run, which I strongly recommend, definitely go see Chicken Run. There's a hilarious parody of one of the Steve McQueen scenes in The Great Escape in Chicken Run.
Oh, there would be another great pairing, Chicken Run and The Great Escape. We have a caller here to talk with. Let's bring him into the conversation. This is Urbana, line number one. Hello.
One of the benefits of living in Champaign-Urbana is being able to go to Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival, and he always has a free movie for families.
Uh-huh.
And he promotes the idea of exposing kids to foreign movies with subtitles. Mm-hmm. And I cannot remember now which movie he had this past year, but I think the previous year he had the Children of Heaven or The Color of Paradise.
Oh, yes.
They're both Iranian films.
Yes.
And they were really marvelous movies. And he asked, he pays attention to whether he hears parents reading to the kids out loud. He says he hears very little of that, even though they're fairly young kids. Because apparently a lot of kids can sort of follow along even if they're too young to be able to read the subtitles very well.
I think that's a great experience for kids, and I think it's wonderful that he does that. Because of the material, you don't want to take young kids to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. But I've done a lot of workshops at schools and have been extremely impressed at how 10, 11, 12-year-olds have reacted and understood that movie. And I think sometimes we don't give kids enough credit, and we tend to think of the material in terms of, you know, are there bare bodies and are there guts spilling out and is there shooting and all of that. But sometimes a movie called The Straight Story, which was rated G, but was really, it was a true story of an elderly man who rode his lawnmower across the state of Iowa to go visit his sick brother, was a wonderful movie and a thoughtful movie, and we shouldn't just try to put children in the category that they have to see, you know, dancing alphabet letters. There's a lot that they're able to understand.
Yeah, I think it was Children of Paradise. The problem that the kids run into is that the little boy loses his sister's shoes,
right,
puts them down while he's at the market, stopping at a particular shop to get something. He puts them down, and a rag picker picks up the plastic bag with her shoes that have been repaired. So the two of them, to hide the fact that he's lost his sister's shoes, have to share a pair of shoes in going to school. And it's about their dilemma of how to protect their father from this knowledge, how to track down the shoes. It's just very, very, very thought-provoking. And I have a pairing for you. I remember seeing The Crimson Pirate as a kid.
One of my husband's favorites, Burt Lancaster.
Yeah, it's just a great, great, fun movie. It took me a long time to find it on video.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw Pirate Cove, which is... a much more recent movie with Gina Davis, and I think it has a couple of bloody scenes in it, but the parody is just so much fun to see this woman pirate doing all these stunt scenes, as you see in a lot of these swashbuckling movies. So that might be something to pair.
That's a great idea. I love, in The Crimson Pirate, the thing that I love the best is that Burt Lancaster, who began life as a trapeze artist and gymnast,
right,
has his circus partner in the movie with him, and they do some incredible stunts.
Right.
So, but that's a lot of fun. And he's just such a delightful rapscallion in that movie.
Well, and I still remember a line from the movie as an adult, mm-hmm, from when I saw it as a young teenager, probably. And that is, he captures, is it Maureen O'Hara? He captures some beautiful woman, sticks her in his cabin.
I think it's like Rhonda Fleming or somebody.
Somebody with red hair.
Yeah.
And he comes and tries the door in the middle of the night.
Yes, I knew that's what you were going to say, yeah.
And it's locked. And the next day he says to her, "Your door was locked." And why? And she says, "Well, if you know the door was locked, you tried it. And if you tried it, you know why it was locked."
You're exactly right. That's my favorite line in the movie. In fact, I quote that line in my book. I love that line.
Yeah, and I don't usually remember quotes, but for some reason, as a young girl, that was one of my introductions to the whole issue of sexuality.
Uh-huh.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you for the call.
That's
well,
wonderful. Thank you.
We'll go on here. We'll talk with someone else in Urbana. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi. I'm enjoying the conversation, and you mentioned earlier watching classics with your kids. One of the things that we did with our older one and now are doing with our younger one who's 9 is picking up movies like Abbott and Costello with the Who's On First bit, and watching Marx Brothers like Duck Soup, and making these occasions for slumber parties, and finding that the kids just roll with laughter. They just love this stuff, and they're asking for more.
Oh, that's just wonderful. You've made my day. That's just what I love to hear. Sure, that stuff is great. The Court Jester with Danny Kaye, The Great Race with Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis. Our movies, it's a mad world, which they're coming out with a remake later this summer, are movies that will just have people falling out of their chairs laughing forever. And I'm a huge fan of the Marx Brothers. I love the Marx Brothers.
Right, and the other thing is, you know, initially kids will say, well, it's black and white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to get them over that that fear of watching something in black and white.
Once you get them over that, then you can really work with them on the next big challenge, which is black and white and silent. And I got my kids hooked on Charlie Chaplin in Modern Times.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you.
Right, thank
thanks
you.
Thanks for the call. Oh, that's also a great suggestion. That, I think, is my favorite Chaplin movie as well.
Yeah.
The thing where he's doing the thing on the assembly line.
Oh, that's my daughter's favorite
it's
part.
It's hysterical. There aren't very many things that I think when I've seen them actually made me laugh out loud.
Right.
But that is one. He was a genius.
Sort of gets stuck and it keeps going. And also, my daughter loved the part where they come up with a machine to feed him.
And oh, yes.
And
yes.
It's great. It's an absolutely terrific movie. And, of course, City Lights has got a more poignant ending, and it's a great movie. And his shorts are The Gold Rush. And, you know, just he's fabulous. He's wonderful.
And I think, too, the idea that I like about Abbott and Costello, or particularly the Marx Brothers, is that they have so much fun with language and wordplay. And nowadays, this dialogue is in so many movies is so stupid.
You know, I'm just in the middle of writing my review, which will be up on my website tomorrow, of Scary Movie 2, which I saw last night. And one of the things that I've been writing this morning is, let me say for the 12 trillionth, and I'm sure not the last time, that just insulting somebody is not in and of itself funny. And just making a reference to some pop culture moment or saying something politically incorrect is not in and of itself funny. There's a category of humor in there somewhere, but you have to be funny and insult somebody, or you have to be funny and politically incorrect. And it's just not enough. It's so lazy, and it's so slack, and it's so depressing to watch that stuff.
And Groucho was certainly the champion wise guy of all time.
Oh, I'll tell you, when I was in high school, the first time that I saw Night at the Opera. And when they got to the bit about the sanity clause, I thought I was going to perish. It was so funny.
We have about 10 minutes left. We have a caller here waiting, another certainly if you want to call. You're welcome to do that. Our guest, by the way, is Nell Minow. She writes about movies and television online and for publications like USA Today and Parents Magazine. She has a website that's moviemom.com with the W's, www.moviemom.com, that has things like reviews of current films, information on movies on video, her picks for all-time best family movies, and a lot of good information there for parents. So if you have access to the internet, you can look at her website. Or if you would like, there's the book we've mentioned that's out in bookstores now, probably also in the library, The Movie Mom's Guide to Family Movies. It's published by Avon and is in paper. We have another caller here to talk with, also in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's fair to mention competing websites. There's a lot of wonderful sources on the web. I like screenit.com. because it has very detailed descriptions of the movies.
I like screenit.com too. In fact, I have a link to it on my website, and the people that do Screenit are also here in Washington, D.C., so I see them at screenings. They do a very, very good job. They don't just say, you know, some strong language. They will tell you every single bad word that's in the movie. I think my favorite screenit.com item was under nudity. They said that a character in the movie had a picture of his wife in a bathing suit on his desk, and you could see some cleavage. So they will tell parents every possible issue that they might want to know, including what they call imitative behavior, something your child might want to imitate after seeing it in the movie. And I think they do a terrific job.
Yeah, I just like that it's completely detailed. I agree that the ratings tell you nothing, so you really need something like that if you want to preview movies for kids.
I like screenit.com, too. I would definitely recommend it to any parent.
Okay, thank you.
All right. And again, other comments, questions are welcome. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that one, and we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. Well, I know that on the website now there's information about current films. Maybe let me ask you, of what you have seen lately, things that are in the theaters now, are there one or two films that just really stand out in your mind that you think are really good and you'd like to recommend?
Well, the only movie that I've given 5 stars to so far in 2001 was Shrek, which I thought was hilarious. And I have to mention that they went right up to the edge of PG-13 with a couple of the jokes in Shrek, and some parents are understandably upset about that, but they wanted badly to get the teenage audience, which they did, and it's been the number one grossing film so far this year. So with a little bit of a caution to parents about some of the material in there, I thought it was a brilliant movie, very, very funny, terrific performances, sensational animation, and a lovely story.
And so at what... Who's too young for this movie, though, do you think?
I'm saying 8 and up.
Oh, okay.
I think that some younger kids will enjoy it. I also want to caution parents, in addition to the mature material, there is a fire-breathing dragon who's a little scary. But even the fire-breathing dragon turns out to be not what you think in the movie. So I loved it. I've seen it twice, and I think I may just go back again. So I like that a lot. Opening up tomorrow is Cats and Dogs, which I was expecting to really hate, but you know what? It was actually very cute. And the premise of the movie is that cats and dogs are secretly tremendously technologically capable and are engaged in a battle for world supremacy. And it's got some great voice talents, Alec Baldwin, Susan Sarandon, Tobey Maguire, John Lovitz from Saturday Night Live, and some hilarious special effects. And it actually was kind of cute.
Mm-hmm. Having known a few cats in my time, I think they rule the world anyway. I don't know why they would be engaged in any battle for... You know, what do they got to complain about?
That's right. Well, the cat who was trying to take over the whole world in this movie has got the voice of the guy who plays Jack and Will and Grace, and his name in the movie is Mr. Tinkles. And I will say that of all of the resolutions of bad guys that I have seen in the past few months with the Tomb Raider and the Fast and the Furious and everything else, I think this one is the most satisfying.
All right. We have someone here to talk with in Hersher. This is line number 4. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about real old movies, which I saw when I was young, and if you know anything where I could get it. It's called Don Camillo and Peppone.
And where was that movie made?
I don't know if it was made in Italy or here in the United States.
Uh-huh.
It was about a parish priest and the communist boss of this village.
Uh-huh.
And it was so hilarious, and I don't know, I want to get that movie someplace, but I don't know where to start.
Well, I'll tell you, it's very, very difficult to find older movies on video because unless they were made by a major studio, the rights problems are just terrible. But I've had a lot of luck doing searches on eBay. For some reason, people will find these things that you cannot find anywhere else. And so I would say give that one a try.
On eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will see if my kids could find it for me.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
You know, have them put in a search and have them keep the search going so that it stays on for a couple of weeks, and you'll be surprised at what will come up.
I bought books when I came over here from Guareschi. He was the writer of the movies, I think, too, and it was just...
Do you remember any of the people who were in it?
I don't know who was the priest. He was a famous guy. He came later. There was a movie made here, too, later on. Of course, this was in the 1950s or so, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to find some of that stuff on video, but if you want to send me an email... or have your children send me an email at moviemom@moviemom.com. I will do my best to try to track it down for you.
Moviemom@moviemom.com.
Just look at my website and just you can send an email right through there.
Okay, I will tell my kids.
Okay.
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, very good. We have about 5 minutes left here on Focus 580 talking with Nell Minow. And if you have questions or you have something to say about the movies, or you have a movie that you'd like to recommend, maybe you've seen it recently with your family and you think that it's a good one, you can tell us about it. Any and all questions, comments are welcome. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere, that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. We talked a little bit, I just asked you what you had been seeing lately that was in the theater that you thought was particularly good. Might there be one or two things that are now available for rent that are current
or
recent?
I'm really glad you asked, because the one age group that I think is the most neglected, and it really makes me crazy, is sort of the age 7 to 14 age group. I don't think that Hollywood pays any attention to them at all, so I'm always very excited when I see something that is right for them. And there are two straight to videos that I like that just came out. One is called Rats, RATZ. and it's about two teenage girls who don't have dates for the big dance. And a sort of a kooky friend of theirs who has access to a magic ring turns two pet rats into dates for them. It's kind of a Cinderella story. And these are dates who like to have a lot of extra cheese on their nachos. And it's extremely funny. I just thought it was delightful. It has a very good cast. So I like that one. And then a sort of a sweet story called Out of Time, which is a Rip Van Winkle story about a guy who goes to sleep when Carter is running for president, wakes up when George W. Bush is running for president. Of course, a few things have changed in that time, and a very sweet story.
Mm. I'm looking at your website, and I'm looking at the listing of the movies now in theaters. Now, I hate to give you a hard time about this, but I'm really curious about something. The listing here for Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
Where you gave it four check marks.
I did.
Which means, let me go back. That means exceptional, something special about it that makes it especially worthwhile. What
right.
about Charlie's Angels made it especially worthwhile?
Okay, now, like Roger Ebert, who was my idol when I was a teenager growing up in Chicago, I judge a movie within what it aspires to be. So Charlie's Angels is not trying to be Gone with the Wind. It's trying to be a sort of a silly kickboxing movie. And in that genre, it was definitely above average. It had some very strong, loyal female characters who do not use guns and who work together to solve their problems and are very capable.
Hmm.
So I thought it was above average for that genre. And believe me, if you've seen as many stupid kickboxing movies as I have, including this week's Kiss of the Dragon, you would consider this one Shakespeare.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. And I think now I was just reading about this in the New York Times, I guess maybe it was just yesterday, based on the success of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, we're going to be seeing a lot of movies with words dragon and tiger in the title. And they're just going to try to sneak him under the radar, figuring people are going to look at it and say, oh, tiger, dragon,
tiger,
oh,
dragon.
This
I'm
must
there.
Be good.
Right.
I'm there.
Pavlovian.
And I love Hong Kong movies. I mean, I would just watch them all day long, but I'm not sure if any of these are going to quite be as artful as the
like
movie
Hong
that
Kong movies, I'll tell you one that's on video recently, and that is Legend of the Drunken Master.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
In Jackie in his prime.
Yeah, Jackie in his prime. Some other people in their prime, too. I mean, he's got some great opponents in that one.
What a remarkable athlete. You can see some of the movies that he's been making recently, and they're, you know, maybe diverting, and you can appreciate his style.
But when
you see that movie, it's just...
Before all of his bones were broken.
Yes, before he managed to break every bone in his body several times.
Right.
It's really staggering.
Let me say this about the Jet Li movie. It's a really crummy movie, but he is an amazing fighter. And they actually had to refine the cameras to be able to follow his hands and feet so that they wouldn't blur on screen.
Yeah, I'm fond of a series he's made called Once Upon a Time in China.
Right.
You know these movies. Yes, he's also very really exceptional athlete. So, I mean, people like those kinds of things.
Right.
But I think going back, though, to... Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, I think one of the things that has some appeal, that may have some appeal, is that two very strong women characters. And I'm sure that if you have daughters and you'd like to have them watch some stuff that has positive female characters, it's not all that easy to find.
Well, you know, An Lee, who made that movie, also made the movie Sense and Sensibility, based on the classic book by Jane Austen. And he said, and he wasn't kidding, this is Sense and Sensibility with kickboxing, because Sense and Sensibility is about two sisters, one who relies too much on her head and one who relies too much on her heart and the mistakes that they make. And this is pretty much the same plot. But, boy, what a movie. That was my favorite movie of last year.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. And I guess also, if people don't mind reading subtitles, I think that Eat, Drink, Man, Woman, which mm-hmm. he also directed, is a really fine movie.
He's extraordinary. Yeah. I think he is. And The Ice Storm is a heartbreaking movie.
Well, you know, we've used up the time here, and I'm sure we could keep going. And I guess I would like to say, first of all, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
For talking with us. And maybe, again, we'll make it not too long, and we'll try and find another time and talk some more.
I would love it. It's a pleasure to be on with you in my home state of Illinois, and you're just lots of fun to talk to.
Very good. And our guest here, Nell Minow, her book is The Movie Mom's Guide to Family Movies. It's published by Avon, is in paper, and also you can, if you got internet access, look for her website, which is www.moviemom.com.